Our next case is 13-827, State of Ohio versus Jordan Beverly. For the appellant, Mr. Hendershot.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, the key question here is the meaning of the enterprise element in Ohio's pattern of corrupt activity statute. And the question is, must the state, when proving that element, show that the enterprise has a structure separate and distinct from the pattern of corrupt activity itself? Now, the answer is a resounding no, and that means reversing the Second District and sending this case back for resentencing. And on that resentencing, that means that the 10-year portion of the sentence that comprises the RICO portion of that sentence should remain on the table. It's currently off the table because of the Second District's legal error. Your Honors, the reason I say it's a resounding no to that question is that my friend has largely agreed with the state on the legal point here. If you look at pages 2 and 5 of his brief, he essentially says that the Second District may have incorrectly defined the enterprise element. Now, my friend also makes a sufficiency of the evidence challenge, but I want to box that off for a second and stick with the legal point, because despite what I read essentially as a concession on the legal point, there's the matter of the Ohio appellate districts that still defend this idea that there is a separate structure requirement. And although those districts span several years and span a couple of Ohio's appellate districts, there is one thread that unites them, and that is, to a T, each of those cases relies on the idea that there is a separate structure requirement in federal law. So that's what the Second District did here in some of its previous cases. It's also what districts like the First and Eighth District have done when saying that there is a separate structure requirement in Ohio law. But the idea that there's a separate structure requirement in federal law and that Ohio should follow it has been foreclosed since 2009. That's when the U.S. Supreme Court decided Boyle versus the United States. And in a 7-2 decision there written by Justice Alito, explained that there is no separate structure requirement in federal law. So the idea that some Ohio district courts continue to articulate that there's a separate structure requirement under Ohio statute because there is one in the analogous federal statute is just not a tenable argument anymore.
Counsel, what was the purpose of the state RICO statute anyway? What in your view, what was the purpose of the General Assembly enacting this statute?
Well, I think there are a couple. Let me go through those. I mean, one, you could look to the Senate sponsor statement that it was intended to be the most comprehensive in the nation. You could look to this court's statements in, say, Schlosser in 1997, and again this year in Miranda, that the purpose of the statute is to attach liability to criminal enterprises. That's one of the purposes. There are certainly others because the enterprise can be a legitimate as well as an illegitimate enterprise. Also, you could compare the history of the statute. The statute that preceded this in Ohio was called the Criminal Syndicalism Statute. And by comparison, it required 5 people getting together and forming a criminal syndicate. By comparison, that shows the breadth of the existing statute. You could also see the breadth of that statute when comparing it to the federal statute, because the state statute defines enterprise to include licit as well as illicit enterprises. That shows a breadth greater than the federal statute that doesn't contain similar language.
So enterprise and syndicate, you don't think requires a separate structure or organization to be proven?
Well, syndicate may have. It was a question that was never faced under the prior statute. The statute that replaced it, the one that's still on the books now from 1985, does not require proving a separate structure. And beyond the argument that the Ohio appellate courts have made to rely on federal law and why I think that's foreclosed, in our brief, we offer you a blueprint of why the text and the structure and the purpose and the history, as we've just been talking about, all suggest that there's no reason to read a separate structure requirement into this statute. I just want to spotlight.
So it's not organized crime, in your view, that is the target of the RICO statute?
It is definitely not just organized crime. You can see that by the comparison to the syndicalism statute. You could look at what the U.S. Supreme Court said just in 2008, and this is in the Bridge versus Phoenix Bond Company case, and they said, collecting all of their own previous cases, that we don't interpret federal RICO through the preconception that it's about organized crime or the preconception that it's about the mob. Instead, we interpret it by its language. And here, the fifth point I wanted to emphasize from our brief after the text, structure, purpose, and history is that you can see this language point by comparing Ohio's statute to New York's statute. The New York statute very explicitly defines enterprise as an ascertainable structure distinct from the pattern. That language is not in Ohio statute. That language has been in New York law since 1987, and despite occasional criticisms of the breadth of RICO, the General Assembly has never seen fit to follow that model that's been in place for nearly 30 years.
Counsel, if we can ignore New York for a moment, if we may, just talk about Ohio.
Sure.
This is your opportunity to tell me why the Court of Appeals is wrong when they said there's no evidence that they're involved in any type of ongoing organization functioning as a continuing unit. Number one, do you agree that that is the standard? And number two, do you think there is evidence?
I'll take those in order. The standard that I think the Second District used, you can look at paragraphs 26 and 30 and 31 of their opinion, where they
do. I was reading.
Yes. Where they say they do use the word separate structure. So I think the Second District is using an incorrect standard of law to measure whether there is an organization. So that separate structure means they're using the wrong legal framework to analyze the evidence.
No, I guess that's why I'm glad you're here today. They're talking about a type of ongoing organization. Those are words that have real meaning. Functioning as a continuing unit. Is that a requirement for a RICO conviction in Ohio?
Yes, as long as you don't think about those two concepts through the lens of a separate structure requirement. The idea that there is an ongoing association between two or more people, that is a requirement. That is probably the essence of the enterprise element. I'm not here to say that enterprise is not a separate element of the statute, just that that element doesn't have the language, and if you'll excuse me to talk about New York for just a second, that it doesn't have that same narrow meaning that it does in New York, that high bar of an ascertainable separate structure.
And so now what you're saying is that if you look at the ongoing association can be proved by both the nature and the circumstance of the criminal activity, the fact that they come together, individuals come together, perpetrate these crimes. In this case, they were theft of autos, burglaries of homes, fencing of the property in a pattern, a sequenced pattern. And it was done with frequency, so there's a temporal issue to it as well. And you're saying if you look at all that collectively, it's clear that there is a relationship that creates an organization amongst these criminals.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Your Honor. So the difference between requiring a separate structure and requiring some kind of structure is, can the jury, from the pattern evidence, here the pattern of 10 house burglaries, or 8 of those were convictions and 2 were attempted burglaries, from that pattern and the pattern of the vehicle thefts and the fencing of property, from that pattern evidence, can you infer that there's a structure there to set
what kind of enterprise what element? Kind of structure? If we would accept the Second District's rationale on this and their requirement for a separate structure, what would that separate structure look like? What, other than coming together for the purposes of pursuing criminal activity, and if it's not a requirement, there'd be, organized mob, what are we talking about?
Your Honor, I think you point up one of the biggest problems with the separate structure requirement. It's a little bit ill-defined. And take a look at, say, the federal appellate court that probably is the originator of this idea. It's an Eighth Circuit case from 1983 called United States versus Bledsoe. And there, this is a multi-state, multi-entity securities fraud. And the Eighth Circuit reversed that conviction, saying, we understand RICO to require some structure that is still there if you subtract out the charged pattern. So I think that's one of the best ways to explain what it is. Another way to think about it is if you have, say, a legitimate enterprise, you have a corner, a restaurant, or a bakery, and so there you have a legitimate enterprise, and then from that, say, you have a loan sharking operation that's using some of the funds from that enterprise. Some of these might satisfy the separate structure requirement, but I think the difficulty of conceiving it just underscores why it's not part of Ohio statute. And I think you can see that by looking at the language of New York statute. You can see that by looking at the history of how it played out.
Well, let me just ask you, if that is a requirement, if 3 members of the same family were all burglars and thieves and criminals, would a familial relationship be sufficient to show a structure, do you think?
Your Honor, the relationship has to have a criminal purpose. So there, I think, their if the relationship is only familial and it's not that some subset of the family organized themselves for the purpose of committing crime, that I think the familial relationship on its own probably would not satisfy the temporal association with a purpose, and the purpose there has to be criminal.
Well, if you're talking about the corner bakery that turns into a loan sharking operation, you'd have to say then under your scenario it would have to be initiated as a front for loan sharking, not a legitimate business that morphed into a loan sharking?
No, I meant to the morphing into the loan sharking, I meant to show what you might think a separate structure requirement would look like. We certainly resist the idea that there is a separate structure requirement at all. And I just mentioned that to point out that even defining what additional the state would have to show under a regime like the Second District envisioned, the difficulty of envisioning what it is, I think, is one reason beyond all the others that we've pointed out that you should reject that being a separate.
But the statute talks about enterprise, and the word enterprise is defined in the statute. When it talks about the individual, proprietorship, partnership, et cetera, or group of persons associated in fact, although not a legal entity. And it says it can be licit for licit or illicit purposes. So isn't the Second District trying to define that group of persons associated in fact to be other than a plan or a pattern of activity? Isn't that the thing that the Second District is looking at the association as something that is separate and apart from what they're doing?
Your Honor, what I read the Second District is doing is they are focused on the association in fact language, and that is most times when you have a criminal enterprise, that is the portion of the enterprise definition that we're dealing with. But I think what the Second District is doing here is imposing on that language a structure that is still there if you subtract out the pattern of corrupt activity. So the corner bakery that's still there if you subtract out the loan sharking, or in this Eighth Circuit case we were talking about, some kind of ongoing structure like organized crime that's still there when you subtract out the pattern of corrupt activity. And that is not the law in Ohio. It's not there primarily because that language of requiring a separate structure simply isn't there.
But does enterprise includes licit enterprises as well as illicit enterprises? I mean, that's what part of the definition of enterprise is.
It does, but remember, Your Honor, enterprise has several functions in the statute. The enterprise can be the target or the victim of the corrupt activity. It can also be the tool or the vehicle for the corrupt activity. So when you have a legitimate business that's the target, that can satisfy the enterprise definition in a way that's not true in this case. Here, the enterprise is the criminal enterprise formed by Beverly and his compatriot Imber and their relationship to each other, the relationship to those that helped them with the vehicle thefts, and the relationship to the fences, this ongoing relationship they had.
So are all those players, the fencers and transporters, et cetera, are they, if they were discovered, going to be charged with a RICO violation?
You know, I think that's not in the record here. My knowledge is that neither of those on either side were charged as well, but certainly they could make up an enterprise. That would certainly be within the realm of the statute to charge all of them with participating in this enterprise.
Well, isn't that the problem here, though? Isn't that really the problem that the Second District's talking about, where they say that their actions were disorganized and chaotic? So how many people on a given day in this family were part of the enterprise? Two or 20?
Well, I think it was, you can think of it in two different ways. The enterprise is either Beverly and Imber. They formed an association, in fact, that lasted for 3 months. That's in paragraph 31 of the appellate opinion.
So their helpers were not part of that enterprise at that point?
Your Honor, I think it's possible that the way the prosecutor presented this to the jury was the enterprise could be either the association of Beverly and Imber or their association with a broader network of people. Admittedly, they were not charged, as far as I know, either the property fences or those helping with the vehicle thefts. But either way you think about the enterprise.
That's what I'm asking you today is, in your theory today, is it two people in an enterprise or 20?
Your Honor, it can be both. Both satisfy the definition. Both pass any sufficiency of the evidence test. Either way you think about it, it satisfies the definition.
Counsel, if you had a scrapyard and people bring you copper piping, different people, are you... And you get a pretty good idea you know, that's not legitimate stuff. So you're receiving stolen property, but are you, would you be in the clutches of RICO?
Here, let me point you to State versus Royale. This is a New Mexico appellate case we cite near the end of our opening brief, and it talks about the pattern of people coming to here. This is trading drugs for somebody's work on somebody's house, and they said that that relationship that's off and on with each individual customer probably doesn't satisfy the enterprise. And to me, Your Honor, that hypothetical sounds much like what the New Mexico Supreme New Mexico Appellate Court concluded there.
But if you're Goldman Sachs and you're unloading on that is an organization that has a structure, and you're unloading these swaps that they knew had very little prospect of coming out ahead. Are you engaged in a are you in the clutches of RICO at that point?
It's certainly possible for an organization like Goldman Sachs, or one of the famous U.S. Supreme Court cases on this topic is Ernst & Young, to be a target of both civil and criminal RICO. It certainly depends on whether you satisfy the pattern element and whether usually it's some subset of those participating in the affairs of the enterprise that are charged. But it certainly, RICO does reach those things, and there are several cases that do address that.
Mr. Andershot, the question that troubles me about this case is, your proposition of law tells us that in order to prove the existence of an enterprise, the state is not required to prove that the organization is a separate structure. So you really want us to try to define how the state should prove an element of a crime. And we generally don't do that, and we let the state offer whatever evidence it wants. And here you have a crime of engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity, which is an association of individuals with an enterprise. And as Justice Lansinger pointed out, enterprise is already defined by the General Assembly. So what is it? We don't participate in telling you how to try your case.
Your Honor, I think that's exactly the point we're trying to make, is the Second District is adding language to the definition of enterprise. They're adding the language.
So you want us to correct a mistake that you think the Second District made by adding an element to the definition of enterprise. Is that what this case is about?
I think it is, Your Honor. I think it falls into the pattern of cases like McLaughlin and Robinson that this court, if there's error, legal error in defining something that led to a reversal in an intermediate court, this court reverses that and reinstates the conviction. I think what the Second District did
here.
So
we just tell the Second District that you can't add things to the enterprise definition, and we let the state try its case however it chooses to, and we don't have to get into all of the elaborate possibilities. You certainly aren't asking us to adopt the Boyle definition or embellish Turquette in some fashion, are you, as the federal has done in RICO?
No, Your Honor, and I would point out that you have another case before you argued in May. This is a Griffin case out of Montgomery County where you are considering a jury instruction question on RICO, on state RICO. So any further definition, whether it's appropriate or not, probably best fits in that case. But we're not asking you to add anything. We're asking you to correct what we view as the Second District's
error. You want
us
to correct the mistake made by the Second District in adding the separate structure element to the definition of enterprise because you think it doesn't belong there. That's really what this case is about.
Exactly.
And counsel, if we agree with you on that, doesn't that mean that we need to remand to the Second District to look at the manifest weight question?
Well, Your Honor, this case is going back. I think really the remand would be to the trial court no matter what, and that's because the Second District found other sentencing error that this court, did not accept for jurisdiction.
But wouldn't we have to send it back if we agree with your proposition of law? Don't we at least have to? So that only gets us past the sufficiency question. So don't we have to have the Second District have a chance to apply what we say is the correct statement of law?
Well, Your Honor, I think, like I was saying, following the pattern of cases like McLaughlin and Robinson and Ginn and others we cite in our reply brief, when this court identifies legal error in a sufficiency question, that it can reinstate the conviction here. Now, in terms of manifest versus sufficiency, what I read the Second District as doing is saying, although Beverly raised this as a manifest weight question, what he really meant to do was a sufficiency, and so I don't view there being a lingering manifest weight question. Okay. That's how I read what the Second District did. Your Honors, would ask you reverse the Second District.
Thank you. Mr. Luckman?
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. My name is Marshall Lockman, and I am the attorney for the appellee, Jordan Beverly, in this matter. I think the case boils down, and I think there's a fundamental question. The proposition of law at issue boils down to whether or not the state is required to prove that the organization is separate and distinct from the pattern of activity in which it engages. The state would have you hold that because perhaps in light of Boyle, the Second District, I'll say overstates the word separate, that therefore they're in error, the proposition should be answered yes, and the conviction should be reinstated. The analysis isn't that simple. While maybe proof of a separate structure in light of Boyle, which still follows Turquette, which I think had that requirement, and I think if anything, Boyle just basically says you don't have to show organizational structure, you don't have to show particular roles, you don't have to show those things. It lessens perhaps what the requirement was in Turquette, but it doesn't get rid of the enterprise requirement. And as I pointed out, the law still requires, even after Boyle, the existence of an enterprise remains an element distinct from the pattern of racketeering activity, and proof of one does not necessarily establish the other.
Have we said that our RICO statute is coextensive with the federal RICO? Because Boyle's talking about the federal RICO.
Right. I know the Second District makes it clear that they have followed in their analysis that the Ohio RICO law is modeled after the federal law, and that they have applied federal law to Ohio RICO cases.
And in this particular case, the trial court used the definition of enterprise and gave that statutory definition to the jury in its instructions. And that's where the Second District found error, saying that they should have also added the separate organizational portion, correct?
They do point out that there was an error in the instruction.
And because they are looking at federal law and saying that Ohio follows federal law.
Correct.
Which we have not said.
You have not said, but I think it is clearly modeled after it, and you look at it for guidance in
but
what
it, but
you're
it's much more extensive than the federal RICO statute, is it not? Ohio statute?
In this specific, as you define what an association is and things like that. I mean, there is a clear definition in the statute of association that must be followed. And I think the problem becomes let's remember, clearly the defendant was convicted of multiple burglaries, receiving stolen property. That's not at issue. They were all third-degree felonies, fourth-degree felonies. To enhance it, the state throws in engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity. It's the only first-degree felony charge in this case. Everything else is maybe 1 to 5 years, 6 to 18 months. And now you throw in the engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity, you're at 10 years. The slippery slope that the state argues, that I believe when you apply the state law of what is engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity. The state, in its own argument, I think, shows the slippery slope nature of applying it in a situation like this. Initially, the state would say that Mr. Beverly and Mr. Imber, the two defendants who were tried in the trial court, were worker bees. They were the brute force. There's no evidence of that. None. And so the state then says, well, you can have two. It can be two. And that's the problem you have. And I think it comes back to applying what is the sufficiency of the evidence that was presented below. There is no evidence. And it still comes down to an analysis that I believe the Second District correctly applied, whether or not it properly stated the state of Ohio's RICO law in light of federal law to the extent that this court wants to follow federal RICO law. You still need an enterprise. And that is the purpose of adding a separate offense to two individuals who perpetrate a string of break-ins over a three-month period. They're found, again, they talk about going down to, I think it was to Butler County or Hamilton County and getting a car, but they're charged with receiving stolen property. They're not charged with stealing those cars. They don't know how they came in possession of those cars. They're just charged with being in possession of stolen vehicles. There's no evidence to establish the pattern of corrupt, the association necessary to engage in a pattern of corrupt activity.
What was the evidence? Are these two guys who, when they're out of beer money or drug money, go out and take stuff together?
Yeah. I mean, that is what the evidence was.
They're drinking buddies or pals or something, and the stuff they're going to take is easier done if you've got two people than one. And that's essentially the case. Was there any evidence that they were being directed by someone else?
I would assert absolutely none.
Is that necessary? That they have to be directed? Why can't they be their own bosses here?
And it could be two. The fact is there could be two, but you still need, then I would assert any time two individuals commit multiple crimes with similar MOs, if you will.
Or they do it together. I mean, that's what we have here, are two individuals who are engaged in this activity together, in tandem. They both have a role to play here.
And I agree, and I would assert that the statute is getting at, I think the question was asked earlier about the, you know, is it a mob? Is it just for organized crime?
Right.
And I would assert no.
You would agree that it's not?
No.
Okay, but you say it has to be something more than what you've got here.
I would say that
what more would you want to see?
That there is, that we do know that they had a plan in place, that there was some kind of, again, I think the Boyle Court, an ascertainable something, that they had a plan in place, that we do this, we go and we fence this over here, that there's more than just, as was pointed out, we're out of money. We just spent the rest of our money on beer. Let's go break into this house over there.
Is that why they were doing it, because they were out of beer money?
There's no indication of why.
But they did have a plan. We're going to hitchhike to another county. We're going to steal a car there, or we're going to acquire a car there. There's no proof that they stole it except the fact that they had it.
Correct.
And we're going to drive then to, this was Clark County, correct?
Clark and surrounding counties. It was more than just Clark.
We're going to go there. We're going to break into homes. We're going to get certain quality of and consistency in the items that we're taking. And we're going to go to known fences, and we're going to dispose of them for cash. That's what happened here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. That sounds like a plan to me.
You can have a plan. Again, you have to have...
And but, they executed their plan, and they involved others in how they operated. It wasn't just the two of them alone. They had to have a fence. They had to have the acquisition of the automobiles.
But we don't know that those were not done in an ad hoc basis. We don't know. I think that...
That's the argument I think the state's making. You can look at the evidence and see a pattern, and that pattern would give rise to the fact that this is an enterprise. This isn't a hit and miss or some sort of, fly by the seat of your pants type of a... In other words, if you're walking down the street and you're looking for somebody to rob, you know, and you see the right victim just coming up the street, if that's what you're intending on doing, that's a whole different, that's happenstance, that's luck of the draw, that's not necessarily a concerted plan. There's too many variables. Here, there was a pattern that was established here, and it worked very well for them for 3 months or so, and I guess I question why that is not, in this particular case, why that doesn't fit the bill of an enterprise. What they need more? They needed, a clubhouse? I mean, what did they need to show that they were an enterprise?
I believe that the state has enacted the Corrupt Practices Act to try to get at, I would argue that the intent was not to go after two individuals who perpetrate even a string of burglaries.
Well, counsel, I was there, and you're right about what was the focus at the time. But it strikes me the problem is that let's back up a second. The feds were, when they did it, were after the mob principally. By the time Ohio got into it, there were organizations dealing in drugs, other kinds of things. The Bar Association is in arguing, gee, you could get legitimate business folks. And certainly it strikes me that some so-called legitimate business folks over this financial collapse should have been chased after in terms of RICO. But the statute spells things out, and as the Chief Justice indicates, your two defendants seem to fit. And isn't the real problem, it strikes me from what I'm seeing in these cases that we're now seeing, is that prosecutors are always looking for another opportunity to put an end to problems in their criminal problems in their community, and they've taken another look at RICO recently and said, hey, there isn't any reason why we can't apply it to these people. Now, your defendants end up with 66 and a half years, right?
This defendant
Which
did.
Strikes me as absurd.
And that was reversed.
But it doesn't strike me that prosecutors are necessarily wrong in saying we can look at this statute and say these two people got together and they did it consistently. They had a used to call it MO, but they had a pattern that they established that worked for them and it made them money. So isn't what you're struggling with is being used in a way the legislature may not have anticipated or intended. But what can we do about that? What should we do about that? We don't try to make criminal statutes fit what we think some legislator 30 years ago was thinking at the time.
I think it is fair to look at legislative intent. What was the purpose of the statute? How is it being applied? I believe that's where we can also follow what the Second District does in looking at the federal RICO law and applying standards in that Because I would assert, if you do look at Turkett, if you look at Boyle, and you take the examples, because this could just as easily been involved interstate commerce in some way, and we could be in the federal system with Mr. Ember and Mr. Beverly or people similarly situated. And I think it is fair to look at how does, clearly the federal RICO statute was designed to go at exactly what you described initially in your question. The organized crime, the gang-related activity, drug syndicates.
And there's two separate legislative bodies here that enacted these statutes. You've got Congress on one hand doing the federal RICO, and you've got the legislature in the state of Ohio, and they did not mirror the federal statute. In fact, when that was passed, it was boasted as being, you know, the most hard-hitting or the toughest RICO statute in the country. So that would suggest to me that the intent of the legislature was to make it the most comprehensive and hardest-hitting RICO statute in the country at the time it was. The problem, I think you're arguing here, what it boils down to, is your clients aren't big enough fish to be caught within the RICO net, that their crimes weren't the type of crimes that was anticipated. They're breaking into homes and stealing, you know, televisions and jewelry and things like that, and they're not, you know, boosting tractor trailer rigs filled with cigarettes, which would, you know, be one of the types of crimes that RICO was intended to, address. So basically, your argument here is you can't prove a separate structure because they don't have all the trappings of a separate structure. And that's what the court said you needed, but in reality, that standard is no longer applicable in Ohio, even though several appellate districts have talked about it. It's not even applicable in the federal jurisdictions.
I see I'm out of time if I may answer the question. Sure. I would say, first of all, a distinct structure is still an element in the federal, first of all. I do believe that does survive Boyle. And second, with regard to the state statute, I believe you still need an association, you still need an enterprise, and I still believe the Second District was correct in saying that there was no evidence that these two didn't just act alone, and again, two people who just worked together to commit burglaries. I would assert that if this court says that is enough, absent any evidence to the contrary, that any two co-defendants, even on a one single break-in, they sit down at 5 o'clock in the evening, they talk about they're going to break into somebody's house.
Mr. Lachman, you're talking about the definition of enterprise, aren't you?
Yes.
Because the statute says no person employed or connected or associated with an enterprise shall engage in the activity. But enterprise is defined to be any individual. Any one person is an enterprise, by definition. Goes on to say partnership.
They do talk about association and partnership, however, I do believe.
The fact is, enterprise includes any individual.
And I think that language is it's any individual who engages in who's in association with others. I don't think you could have. I can't see how you can have.
Group of persons associated in fact, although not a legal entity.
Right. And they don't have to be. And that's the thing. It doesn't have to be Ernst & Young. I mean, it can
so
be.
So these are two people that are associated with each other.
But
that's
again,
all they have to prove. That's what the definition says.
So isn't that a role for the legislature? If prosecutors are misusing the RICO statute, catching too many clients, defendants such as your clients, isn't it time for the legislature then to relook at the RICO statute, not this court decide that the prosecutors are applying it and catching too many small fish?
I think that is one option, but I do think this court can look at the purposes and principles of the statute when it was created, the justification behind it, and I think this court could properly interpret that it is not these kinds of defendants that the statute intended to go after and could rely on federal guidance for that purpose.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hendershot, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to collect several miscellaneous points. I hear my friend say this just doesn't fit the pattern of RICO. Let me get to after one point about Boyle and federal law. Even if you thought to follow that, I hear him say that the separate structure requirement survives Boyle. Take a look at the end of our opening brief, especially page 24. We cite you circuit decisions and treatises that all, to a T, say the same thing. The separate structure requirement doesn't survive Boyle. Whether this fits the pattern of RICO, I would make two separate points about that. Take a look at your decision in Miranda earlier this year, or the cases we cite in our reply, like Birdsong and Perry. These are cases just like this one, a drug ring, a theft ring, a ring of people stealing checks, exchanging them for expensive things at Home Depot, and fencing them. Those are all upheld convictions under RICO from this court and the intermediate appellate courts.
Well, the problem that the appellee is arguing here is that the legislature never intended to net these kind of defendants when they passed the RICO statute, even though they bragged at the time that this was the most comprehensive or the toughest RICO statute in the country. The language in it is very broad, and coupled with the statements made about the legislation, one would arrive at the conclusion they intended it to be used and used extensively. But getting back to how do you remedy that, it's a legislative fix, is it not?
Absolutely. And look at what you just considered in Stevens earlier this year, that even though it didn't deal with this, Stevens mentions that the General Assembly upped the threshold for individual enterprise from $500 to $1,000. The General Assembly has tweaked the RICO statute. They've amended it in 2002, 6, 7, 9, 11. Never have done what New York did. So yes, it's a legislative solution. It hasn't happened yet. It's not like New York statute. It doesn't contain the separate structure requirement. And that's why the Second District is in error here.
So it will, I mean, depending on what we decide here, it will go back for resentencing based on the fact that the 66 years were deemed to be an abuse?
Yes, Your Honor. The only 10 of the 66 and a half years are connected to RICO.
Right.
This court did not accept jurisdiction over the other sentencing errors, including just abuse of discretion for the length of that sentence. And, Your Honors, I would close by saying if you just want a sample of the evidence in this case, listen to Exhibit 481 from the trial. That's Everly's one-hour video-recorded confession. He talks about buying a battery to help steal a vehicle. He talks about switching out license plates to conceal vehicle thefts. He admits to 3 or 4 burglaries. He offers to take detectives to the fences that he and Imber consistently used. That gives you a taste. There's more detail on pages 9 to 12
Thank
of
you.
Our reply brief. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, gentlemen, we'll take it under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marsha, will you call a recess, please?